We know that when Jesus walked upon the water, a phenomenon occurred in this world that is not understood. And last week together we saw that this unusual experience was a preview of an experience that all of us are inevitably going to discover for ourselves. We found that there was an event on the sea, and although not present there at that time, being somewhere else, that which was called Jesus suddenly appeared walking upon the water. And as we rested in the consciousness of the Father, we learned that this was not a physical form walking upon water, but rather, this was the divine eye made visible as a form of the soul. A fourth dimensional body appearing and not being obstructed by material laws such as gravity or matter. And instantly, without taking thought, this occurred. And instantly, as it occurred, all the laws of time and space were pushed aside. And so you and I, in our bodies of the soul, we'll discover that when we are not in thought, we are moved. Moved in such a way that wherever we are needed, we are. And whatever we must do, we are doing, because I, the Spirit in the midst of us, is greater than any external appearing event in matter. I within us dissolves that which appears to be the discord. But only because we're resting in the knowledge of identity, not standing in the knowledge of a personal self, in a material form, in a material world. Now, prior to this, Jesus had demonstrated other things. The Spirit released through the absence of a personal self had also calmed the sea at another time. And we who are at that level of consciousness that is capable of overcoming the belief in a material universe are still wondering why, even though we feel the peace, even though we even feel the presence, we find ourselves sometimes unable to throw off the material discord. In the face of the presence, in the face of the inner peace, we are still confronted with discords that somehow remain to torment us. Questions that remain unanswered. And I think we can today face that with a better understanding because of these demonstrations in the Bible. Once we understand walking on water is the activity of a soul body, not of a person with supernatural gifts. Once we understand that stilling the storm was not the removal of material laws, was not overcoming nature, but was the revelation of the non-existence of the storm, then we begin to see that just as a storm is not an individual experience, but a group experience. It's not one person's consciousness outpictured, but the consciousness of many. And in similar fashion, we discover that our problems, that we call my personal problem, is never that at all. And when we try to overcome my personal problem on the level of my personal problem, and still cannot do it, it is because we have not seen the nature and the source of what we call my personal problem. We have not overcome the illusion of world mesmerism, the universal mesmerism. And so I want you to see it this way. The boy has a bloody nose, or the woman has a dizzy spell, or the man has a weak heart. And so the mother says, my son has a bloody nose. The woman says, I can't walk, I have a dizzy spell. And the man says, I can't get up and go to work because my heart is weak. Each considers this a personal problem. And undoubtedly, each of us has considered our problems as personal problems. And then you go into the spirit, you touch your center, you realize the peace, and you still have the personal problem. And you say, I thought I was supposed to do these things and it would dissolve. It's the same way when a cancer is cut out. It comes back sometimes in a year. Why? What did we cut out? Did we cut out the cause? When you have not cut out the cause of your personal problem, that same cause will manifest as a continuation of it or as another problem. And always the cause is not in you. And when you say this is my problem, you are placing a cause in you. And you will discover that when you place the cause in the world mind and realize the problem is only passing through you, passing through, not yours, not attached to you, passing through, presented to you from the world mind at the moment you become aware of it. And it's up to you at that moment to see that this is not my problem. This is a world mind problem. This is not my bloody nose. This is not my weak heart. This is not my dizzy spell. This is a world problem. It doesn't belong to me at all. And strangely enough, once you locate it as a world problem, you find a depth of inner peace you hadn't known before. You have faced the world mind. You have located the cause of that which is trying to manifest in you. And had you accepted it as your problem, you would have nailed it down. And the moment you recognize it as world problem, you find a missing dimension, a weapon, which enables you to see, I am not unemployed. I do not have a false appetite. The world has a false appetite. The world mind is unemployed. The world mind has a weak heart. The world mind has every problem, and that is where every problem is found. In the world mind, never in an individual. It is merely presented to the individual for acceptance or rejection. Your rejection is the recognition of its source. The moment you know that its source is not God, you know its source is the world mind. And in that moment, you have seen that the snake is not there. The recognition of it not being there is the end of the hypnotism. That's the end of your weak heart. It's also the end of your unemployment. It's the end of your dizzy spell, and it's the end of your bloody nose. The minute you locate where it's coming from, and know that there is no world mind, you have located the mirage, and the mirage which is the source of the mirage. You pull the rug out from under the problem. And I don't care what your problem is. When you can face it and locate its source and then know that the source is not God and therefore non-existent, you're on your way home free. Always, the problems that irritate us the most and that seem the most persistent are those that we have accepted as my problem. And you have never had a problem in your life. You have accepted world problems and made them your problem, and you have grappled with the shadow. Now you will see the power of this when you do it. If you have done it, you know the power of it. As we look at the Master, we see him faced with an unusual situation. The sea is rising. The sea is actually so high that the waves are over the ship. This isn't the same one as when he walked upon the water, and when the ship was on the land instantly. This is another one, an earlier one. And yet this earlier one was necessary for the later one to take place. He was sleeping on the ship. But before he was sleeping, he had given us the Sermon on the Mount. Which incidentally is almost word for word the code of the Essenes. He had given us the Sermon on the Mount. He had healed the son of the centurion. He had resurrected the dead boy at Nain. And now one of the scribes came up and said, "This is marvelous. I'll follow you over the earth. Wherever you go, I want to go." And he looked at this eager scribe, knowing that he wanted to follow a man. That's where we're going to begin our Bible lesson. He wouldn't let this scribe follow him as a person. He had to tell him and all those who were so eager to follow a man that his name was not man, Jesus. His name is never the head of a religion. You cannot follow the person, he said to the scribe, and he said it in his own words, which we shall see here. Now when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave commandment to depart upon the other side. Always, the other side has a symbolism. Out of matter into spirit, higher. And a certain scribe came and said unto him, "Master, I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest." This is the material mind willing to follow the man. Jesus saith unto him, "The foxes have holes, the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head." The Son of Man, the second birth. The first birth was the son of woman. The rebirth makes him the Son of Man. He has no place where to lay his head. Why? He is not material form. I am not form. I am consciousness. I am infinite consciousness. How will you follow me in the flesh? And so he's telling the scribe, who could not understand, "Follow the Christ of your own being. That's how you follow me, because that's my name, infinite Christ, and I am in the midst of you, not standing out here. There's no place to lay my head. I am not a physical creature. Those miracles you saw were not performed by a physical creature. And the miracles you are about to see will not be performed by a physical creature. No physical creature is going to raise the dead, or walk upon the water, or heal the cripple. The Spirit of God in you is the Messiah." And so he first qualifies what is about to happen by telling us, don't be confused and personalize the event. Don't say, "Oh, what a great man Jesus was," but realize that Jesus is your name walking there as the invisible eye. This is you. This is yourself. This is the invisible Christ made visible as. And every word that Jesus says is your invisible self speaking. Every activity that you see engaged in by Jesus is your invisible self moving in consciousness. This is the eye of your being demonstrating its presence and its perfect power. Whatever Jesus said is the truth of your being. Whatever Jesus did is the truth of what your being is always doing. And when you are in being instead of out of being, you will find that your being is doing precisely what he did. And so if he's now going to save a ship at sea, we must see that I in the midst of me save that ship at sea. I in the midst of Jesus, I in the midst of John, I in the midst of Peter, I the one, the only, in the midst of all, am greater than he that walks the earth. I in the midst of you am the power of God. This is not the man, this is I in the midst of you, about to show Peter and the others that where I am realized, the inner conflict called storm in the outer is no longer there. And so he sets the stage. But here's another, even before they can go any further. Another of his disciples said unto him, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. But Jesus said unto him, follow me, and let the dead bury their dead. And so we see the word dead as applied to those who are dead in the material sense. Dead in the belief that they live in the flesh. Dead in the belief that the world is material, that bodies are material, that life is material, that birth and death is material, that possessions are material, that we live in a material universe. These are the dead, who are not alive to I in the midst. Dead to Christ. Dead to reality. Dead because they believe that what happens between the cradle and the grave is life. Dead because they have not seen life as a continuous, uninterrupted, perfect continuity, proceeding from God, through God, in God, and never leaving God. And so dead. And now they're ready. And when he was entered into a ship, his disciples followed him. Behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch as the ship was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. Now, the tempest in the sea is always an outpicturing of the inner consciousness of a group of people. The whirlwind is the outpictured consciousness of that area. Always the visible material world is the inner level of consciousness that has been attained by individuals, collectively. So our material world is the level of consciousness which we collectively have been able to reach. And now it is externalizing as a storm and a wind blowing the waves. If we were to say Jesus stopped the storm, it would do us no good whatsoever. But he's introducing now a new element. He has shown us that the dead are those who are dead in matter. Now he's introducing a new element called motion in matter. The great powerful storm moving, the waves rising. If matter isn't there, how can it rise? If matter isn't there, how can it blow? So matter in motion is a double illusion. no more real than a stone or a pebble lying in the street. No more real than a dizzy spell or a bloody nose. Matter cannot move because matter isn't there. Therefore, the movement of matter, however perilous it may appear to be, is recognized as the impossible. There can be no motion to non-existence. God is not in the whirlwind. And however horrible the tempest may appear to the frantic disciples, he is asleep, completely unaware of any such occurrence. Why? Because there isn't any. The collective consciousness is out picturing a storm. Now we're being told that weather is not an act of God, are we not? The world believes it is. The world believes that all weather is a God activity. That beautiful Hawaiian weather, the beautiful sky, the beautiful mountains, the beautiful water, and the countryside lavish with flowers. Certainly all this is of God. And then suddenly the typhoon, the tidal wave, the ship swallowed in the sea. Is that of God? What changed it? Neither the good nor the bad were of God. Weather is a material illusion. We make our own weather collectively and individually. And the disciples have made their weather. They have made their storm in a conflict, in a turmoil, in a fear. All of the conditions of weather, which are unfriendly, represent the externalization of the world mind accepted individually. And then we say, this is the weather in San Francisco. This is the weather in Marin. This is the weather across the bay. It isn't. It's the consciousness outpictured of those who dwell there. It is world mind fooling with its cosmic hypnotism those who still believe in a material world. And the disciples are among those. They are still dead in matter. They're dead in the wind. They're dead in the water. They're dead in the motion of the wind. Unaware that I can never leave you. Unaware that I am all there is. Unaware of omnipresence. Unaware of the power of divine love. Unaware that only one is present. The Lord our God is one. And so the cosmic hypnotism, the universal mesmerism, becomes an individual experience for each one who is unaware of it. And they come to him, frantic, plead for help. Lord, save us, we perish. They are life eternal and they expect to perish. And so he chastises them. Why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? There's only waves 100 feet high, and he says to them, why are ye fearful? What is he saying when he says, why are ye fearful of those waves that are 100 feet high? Because they're matter. And matter is only mortal thought. And the motion of the matter is only the motion of mortal thought. You're looking at your own thought. You mean there aren't any waves out there? That's right. There are no waves out there. There's only mortal thought appearing as waves. What about all the oceans in the world? Same thing. Cosmic bind, appearing as oceans, mountains, rivers, lakes, seas, grass, flowers. The material world is mortal mind externalized. That's what he's teaching. Not just this wave on this particular sea, but all matter, all solids, all liquids, all gases, all are the denial that spirit is all. The germ, the infection, the contagion is a denial that spirit is all. The whirlwind is a denial that spirit is all. And how does it get there? It doesn't. It only appears to be there. All matter appears to be. He is teaching the non-existence of a material universe. And as incomprehensible as that may be to most of the world, every time that we are able in our own small way to experience the non-reality of matter, and consequently the non-power of matter, we are reliving this incident on the sea with him. We are learning that I in the midst of me is the living spirit of God, and I am infinite spirit. There is no place where I am not, and I have no opposite. Only I exist. As far as the eye can see and beyond, I am. And the roaring sea or the calm sea, neither is there. I am. Neither the good sea nor the bad sea. Neither employment nor unemployment are there. Neither good health nor bad health are there. I am. The invisible spirit is all that is here. There are no goods and there are no bads. There is only invisible spirit. And the outpictured material universe ceases to have power to make us seek the good in preference to the evil, to make us choose between one or the other. Rather, we rest in the knowledge that as I find my own substance, that as I can say to the scribe within me, there's no way to follow me, I have no place to lay my head. I am not form. And I accept no form. I am that spirit, which is the all. I am infinite consciousness. And therefore, as you stand in your true identity of infinite consciousness, watching the world pictures, I in the midst of you, not you, but I in the midst of you. It is I who dissolve the world pictures. It is I who adjust and bring forth the invisible harmony. I in the midst of you overcome the world. And so they are of little faith because they're panicking. They're really looking for another material power to overcome this material power, or some supernatural power. They're not looking for the spirit to present itself as peace, tranquility, harmony, absence of discord, presence of God. They cannot stand in the center of their own being. And so they are of little faith. Now you know that few of us are faced with situations that are more difficult than the one he is bringing to our attention. Really everything we face is of the same nature. It is a material condition, a material discord, a material lack, a material threat. And always, The problem never exists because only God is present. Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm, but the men marveled, saying, "What manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him?" The winds and the sea did not obey him. He was demonstrating that the storm was a cosmic illusion, that universal mesmerism outpictures as good weather and bad weather, good health and bad health, prosperity and depression. He was telling us, do not seek the good things or the bad things, because they will both change and they will both perish. He was inviting us to walk in heaven on earth. And so today is just that, walking in heaven on earth. We've all made out our little charts. Some of you have turned them in, about identity. I'd like you to hear some of them. They'll show you the level of the class. There is a definite strength among the students. We have all come to a place now where we know identity intellectually. I'll show you what I mean. Now, you couldn't write these things unless you had the intellectual awareness of identity. I and my father are one. This student took quotations, and that was a very good choice. I and my father are one. Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. Now are we the sons of God. Take no thought for your body. I am the bread of life. Thou couldst have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Ye are the temple of the living God. And that spells out identity. And a person could use this to remember and practice a meditation from this until it becomes consciousness. I and the Father are one. Deny it to another, you lose it yourself. Everywhere I am. Now is God's power. Total surrender. I can of mine own self do nothing. Trust. Yesterday's identity marks tomorrow's harvest. You see, we have substance here. I am God. I am life. I am love. D, destroy this temple and I will raise it up. In 3 days, Jesus said. E, even if ye walk through the valley of death, God is with us. N, never be afraid, for God is with us all the way. T, the tree of life has never been moved and is still there in the center of our being. Now, a person has to feel something like that to say it. The tree of life has never been moved and is still there in the center of our being. I, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. T, the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Why is yea, be still and know that I am God. Now, these are all an experience for the persons who have done these, and there are others, and they're all very good, which was a very pleasant thing to see, because it means we can go further. Now, one thing that is noticeable among these statements about identity is, number one, that we are all claiming what we are. And this isn't good. I am this, and I am that, and I am the other thing. Rarely do you find one in here that says, I am humble, I am a true witness, I am listening, I am meek, I am waiting for the will of the Father to express, I am glorifying the Father. It's all about I, and it's still saying identity on a higher level of identity than the human sense, but it's still very close to a higher I than this I. And it's not the witness who's quiet, learning how to let the infinite I do its own work through a me. And so identity is a beginning. And you know, when you come to identity as a fact that you're going to live with, you find it necessary to do something else, and that is what may be called to re-identify. To re-identify the world around you and to re-identify yourself. Because even though you have just said, I am this, that, and the other thing, you can't throw away a half century of being something else just because you made a declaration. And so all your old habits continue right on up. And while you're saying, I am this, that, and the other, you still think you're a material form. You still think you're going to go to work tomorrow, or not. You still think you're going to do the same human things you've been doing. You're still thinking in terms of mortality. You're still buying insurance. You're still doing mortal things. And so re-identification is now this. You have come into intellectual agreement about identity. Fine. Now we must come into spiritual agreement about identity. And that is re-identity. That is going within, with this new identity you have accepted intellectually, and abiding there. And there are about 6 or 7 levels that require re-identification because they control all the rest of the levels. Now let's see then. We're re-identifying as the identity which we say we are. And if we are what we say we are, the Son of God, the Spirit, this is heaven. And so in your re-identity, you are saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and this is it. I, identity, am moving in heaven here and now. That's part of re-identity. Now that must be done until you can accept that heaven is where you are. Heaven is everywhere you're looking, and it makes no difference what world pictures are being presented. Heaven is where you are. And until you're in that awareness, you'll find you're walking in two worlds. One intellectually claiming to be in another, and then going right out, jumping over puddles. And so heaven is here. And in heaven, you cannot find any germs. You cannot find any discord or distress. When you do find germ, discord, distress, evil, error, sin, etc., what are you finding? You're finding that you're not in heaven. You haven't re-identified your location. You are in heaven, and therefore, only that which happens in heaven can happen in your consciousness. There's no time in heaven. The only time in heaven is now. And so now becomes a new time for you. That's part of your re-identification. Now. And there's nothing in heaven ever becomes something. It is. Is the only reality in heaven. There is no future. Everything is. And so when you are in the consciousness of being in heaven, you're in the acceptance that everything is. There's nothing I have to seek, nothing I have to pray for, nothing I have to struggle to get. Everything is, or else I have not accepted that I am in heaven. Everything is. And now is the only time there is no tomorrow. And because everything is, tomorrow is. Today, tomorrow is today. And however strange that may sound, eternity is today. Every tomorrow is already now here. And that's part of being in heaven. The knowledge that everything is. now, here. That's the acceptance of your fullness. This is part of re-identification. And then you're in the continuing consciousness of is, now, here, heaven, where all is perfection. Any imperfection is hallucination. And there's only one power in heaven, love. Divine love is the only power, the only law here. And so what have you got? You've got a complete re-identification that heaven is where I am, here and now. And the fullness is, because perfection is all that can exist in heaven, and divine love is the only power, the only law. Now you're really accepting identity. And because of this identity, you can be in a state of humility. There's nothing to seek, strive, and struggle for. Recognizing identity as spirit, recognizing power and love as spiritual presence right here, I rest in the Word and let the power of divine love manifest its own universe. Glorify itself. You're in the vast peace which has nothing to seek, nothing to strive for, nothing to remove, nothing to get rid of, nothing to correct. There are no mountains in heaven to be removed. You rest in the Word. You have all kinds of scriptural authority for this. Cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostrils. Cease from the form, the material form. My kingdom is not of this world. And that's the CC from time and space. It is I, be not afraid. That's the acceptance of spiritual identity. The glory I had with thee before the world was is still mine. That's the assurance that spiritual identity is forever, always. All that I have is thine. That's the assurance that nothing is withheld. It is present. It is thine. And as you go through your Bible mentally, you discover that everything in there is an authority for you to live here now in heaven. In the is. You have an is, which is the perfection of God expressing. And there is only one is, one infinite consciousness expressing. But it appears as, because between the is and the as, there is a cosmic mind. And as is moves through the cosmic mind's interpretation of it, you get the multiple expressions which appear to us as this, that, and the other thing. You're looking at the changing universe, which is as. But always behind it is the one perfect divine love expressing as the is. And the acceptance of now is. Now is the Father. Now is divine love. Now is fullness. Now is allness. Now is all that God is. Everywhere God is being God. Everywhere God's perfection is present in all things. My grace is thy sufficiency in all things. We rest in the knowledge that this is heaven now, and there is no condition in heaven other than the perfection of being in all things. And when you rest there, you're in identity, and you will discover that your own spiritual substance will readjust for you that which had appeared outwardly as the unemployment, the lack, the limitation, the overweight, the underweight, the germ, the contagion, the infection, the problem, the discord, the unhappy relationship, everything that it appeared to be was cosmic mind universally expressing, accepted in your most vulnerable spots, appearing as your personal problem. Because you were not standing in the knowledge, the truth of being, not in the universe of God. All of this is part of the re-identification, so that you walk through this world of as, looking at everything that appears as this and as that, knowing that it isn't that at all. Only is there, appearing through cosmic mind as this, that, and the other. You live in the is, in the now, and experience the as, but not accept it, because heaven has no as. Everything in heaven is perfection itself expressing. Now, whenever you've got a problem, then, you have taken yourself out of heaven and out of spiritual identity, and you have merely read Bible verses as some people perform calisthenics, some kind of a physical exercise, or some kind of memorized prayer. The points given to us by these biblical events are to free us, to purify us of material thought. The unreality of matter is one of the prime purposes of these biblical events, to teach us the unreality of matter. And even though something in us stubbornly clings to the reality of matter, that isn't even your mind doing that. That's the world mind refusing to give up. Always there is the world mind telling you, but matter is real. And until you face that, until you see that Jesus was demonstrating matter is unreal, non-existent, storms are not there, there's no water to walk upon, there's no cripple to heal, because these things do not exist in heaven. And earth is our material consciousness about heaven. When you are out of your material consciousness about heaven, you discover heaven was where you always were. There is no other place. And so, because of these very nice papers that you submitted here, it's clear that we are ready. We are ready to spend another portion of this year losing all remnants of material thought. And it leads us to a place where we can look at those who talk about projecting the soul body through space, and we can see that we will not have to project a soul body. Rather, we will discover that I am in my soul body now. I have no other. And the dropping away of that which is not my soul body reveals that I have ever been in it. My soul was never in a body that decays, in a body that dies. My soul was that which is my eternal life, and is now here. And that soul has its body, and I am not going to project it. It knows what to do, where to do, and how to do it, and it's doing it all now. And when we start to move through the invisible, it will not be because there is a will in a human being projecting a soul body. It will be because we are experiencing the actual activity of the soul, which instantly could move from a mountaintop to water to appear where a ship was drowning. And you will be moved and I will be moved in such a way that we are where we belong at the right moment, always. I in the midst of us will be the projector, not a human mind. But first, all material remnants must be purified. We must re-identify. And we must look at everything that appears as and re-identify it as is. It cannot be what it appears as because it appears as matter. We must re-identify it as invisible spirit through cosmic mind and then individual mind appearing as. And then we can look at the whole world and know that everyone is seeing their level of consciousness. But I am not bound by their level of consciousness. I am not bound by what they externalize. What they externalize is just as non-existent as the waves at sea, which threaten to bury the ship. Always, what appears as is the camouflage of the cosmic mist, the cosmic thought atoms. But behind them and where they are, above them, below them, and in them, where they are is always the now perfection of spirit, of being, which I am. This should become our daily consciousness. It should be our daily rebirth. Every day we should have a second birth. Every day the son of woman should become the son of man. Every day we re-identify our universe and our identity. Every day we come to the second birth and let that be the beginning of our day. To live in the heaven of now and is. Now let's just dwell on some of these things in a contemplative meditation for a moment. Because through your contemplative meditation, you're preparing the way for your listening meditation. You're clearing out the density of thought. You're letting yourself relax from the pressures of thinking, of planning, of trying to remember things. You're willing to walk out on truth alone, knowing it is power, it is present, it is activated by love. You don't have to direct it, you can rest in it. And then just let go. Standing in the knowledge of infinite substance, which spins itself into whatever forms are needed, wherever they are needed, and whenever. My substance is my God. My spiritual essence is the Father within. It lives now here in heaven, in the is, and I am never going to leave the now. I'm never going to become. I'm never going to stray 1 second from now, because only now am I that essence. Never tomorrow, never yesterday, always now. Now never had a tomorrow, never had a yesterday. Now is infinitely and eternally now, and that is my home. Never fooled into moving out into time. Now. Accepting is. God is. Only God is. Only God's perfection is. I care not what appears as. Only God's perfection is. and be sure that my soul is where it belongs, always. Now, if I were to tell you that your son's nose is bleeding, you could quickly dismiss it knowing only perfection is. I am faced with a cosmic image. I will not accept it as belonging to my son. It is not a local truth. It's a cosmic image presented to me. And in this state of knowing is now, whatever is not of God is not now. And that's all I have to do. Stand still. Rest. And watch the spiritual essence of being adjust the outer picture and show you no nosebleed, no dizzy spell, no this, no that. Only I am present. There is no other. The Lord our God is one. But you must be at this place always. And all that is the preparation for moving as soul through the universe. Unimpeded by material obstruction, by condition, by material concepts appearing as form, free in self. Be thankful, then, that everything that comes at you forces you to rise to the higher ground. It would be so easy to relax and say, oh, well, we've got it, but we haven't. We'll never have it until transition. Suppose we rest a little and come back in about 5 or 10 minutes and see where the Father takes us then.